Okay, welcome everybody to our Building Zion conference call, Sunday evening, 7. Tonight's topic is really one that was really an eye-opener for me. All of these quotes that I've been sharing over the last months on this call were found as I was looking up quotes about building Zion or establishing Zion by early LDS leaders in the 1850s through the 1880s, back when they were really going at it. And one of the things that really surprised me was the quotes on the topic relative to the topic today, and that is that building Zion includes achieving economic independence from the world. And it's been fascinating to read these quotes, and I'm excited to share them with you tonight. And then we can talk about what that means for us today. The first quote I'd like to share of really, this topic kind of goes in the face of today's commonly understood meanings of what Zion is. Typically, people I've interacted with online, members of the church, see Zion as the church. So when we're building Zion, we're just doing the work of the church. And others see building Zion as meaning, oh, that's someday when Jesus comes, we'll build the New Jerusalem. That's building Zion. Well, all of these quotes that I've been sharing over the past several months show that those are just tiny tips of a big, big iceberg, that building Zion was actually something that the saints were very much engaged in for that 40-year period before Utah became a state, that they saw it as God's will that they build Zion in Utah, that they were actively attempting to achieve to build communities that could be labeled as Zion communities, just like Enoch, City of Enoch. And this particular topic tonight shows very clearly that to them, building Zion was an economic activity more than anything. Of course, you know, you can't build Zion with wicked people. And that's kind of assumed in these quotes today, that the people are at least making a strong attempt to be righteous. So here's a Apostle George Albert Smith quote, 1862. This one's really good. And He mentions things, and several of these quotes that I'm about to share mentions things that you would never associate with the idea of building Zion. Here goes. I hope that all has been said by the brethren in reference to the culture of hemp, flax, indigo, and in fact, all that will tend to build up Zion will be attended to. For let it be remembered that it is coming to this necessity of producing for ourselves or to go without. And the question resolves itself into this simple proposition: clothes or no clothes? We must make our own woolen, flax, hemp, and cotton goods, or we must go naked. So he ties in the production of materials to produce clothing as part of building Zion. And he wasn't the only one to do that. Let's see. This quote's rather long, Brigham Young, 1877. So this was his last general conference talk before he died. And as you know, through his entire leadership of the LDS Church, he was constantly talking about Zion. And so this is his last conference talk. And again, he ties in economic production and becoming and manufacturing all our own consumer goods as part of building Zion. We want to get a correct understanding respecting all these matters which so materially concern us. What would be the first lesson necessary to teach the people were we to commence to direct their labors to the great end of becoming of one heart and one mind in the Lord, of establishing Zion and being filled with the power of God? In other words, what should we teach the people first in regards to establishing Zion? It would be to stop expending and lavishing upon our dear selves all needless adornments and to stop purchasing the importations of Babylon. He's referring to the fact that the saints were buying products produced in the United States. So he's calling the United States economy Babylon. And he's telling the people the first thing you need to do to build Zion, to establish Zion, is to stop buying Babylon's products. Does that mean we have to stop shopping at Walmart?
We can
ourselves produce everything necessary for our consumption right here at home. We can improve on what has been done, and we want you to do so. Plant out the mulberry tree and raise the silk, and let your dresses, your shawls, your bonnets, and your ribbons, and everything you use to clothe and adorn your bodies be the workmanship of your own hands. Boy, that's a tough pill to swallow, huh?
Well, who's going to make the sewing machine, you know? If I need a new sewing machine, is somebody going to make that for me?
Well, that's a tool of production.
It is.
That would need
but
to be produced.
But is China going
to
make it? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Is there somebody here that could make one?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Let me finish. This keeps going. It's a long one, I know, but it's a good one. Let the brethren take hold and carry out in every department the same principle of home manufacture until we shall be able to produce the materials and make up every article necessary to clothe and adorn the body, from the crown of the head to the soles of the feet. Then we shall become a self-sustaining and growing people, and we shall have to do it. All this is in the elements in which we live, and we need the skill to utilize the elements to our growth and our wealth, and this is true financiering. So he's talking about the fact that the people with money in Utah were using it to just make more money for themselves, and he was trying to get them to help finance producing products here locally so that the saints could become independent, manufacturing all their own consumer goods. And as I've mentioned on several calls before, Brigham City was able to achieve 85% self-sufficiency in that department, producing their own consumer goods. And like I say, when there was a worldwide depression, they hardly even noticed it, because they were independent, self-reliant. There are other quotes saying the same kinds of things, and some of them are really good. A George Buchanan quote in 1868 and another Brigham quote in 1873, but it doesn't specifically say, neither of them specifically say, that this is part of building Zion. But those several quotes I've read already do mention that. The next subcategory in this category is that is one of the reasons why. You know, you might ask, well, what does manufacturing our own consumer goods have to do with building a Zion society? Why is that even important? And the next three subcategories, kind of answer that question. And the first one is that economic dependence on the wicked brings sorrow. It's bad. We don't want to be economically dependent on wicked people. So here's a quote. Brigham explains that. 1868. There are certain rules in life and certain principles to be observed by this people. They must cease trading with those who would destroy us. To be called out from the wicked, like they were, and then take a course to call the wicked to us, how inconsistent it is. If the Lord were to say, quote, I will let the wicked drive you out again, and I will call you to another place. where there is no one to disturb you. How long would it take? How long would it be until the course taken by many would call the wicked in among us again to seek to destroy us? The Latter-day Saints must stop this course, or they will bring evil upon themselves, and we will have to leave again. These are the things we have to learn. We have the privilege of choosing now. It is in our hands, it is within our power, whether we will stay in these mountains and build up the Zion of our God, or make the wicked and ungodly fat by our labor and give them our possessions. This many are doing, by running in debt to our enemies and pursuing a course that is wrong. If they do not cease it, they will have cause to weep and mourn. The point he's making is that we fled the United States to get away from the wicked and the persecution they bring upon us, but by doing business with them, we've pulled them to us. So now they're here among us. And his point is that that would be bad. Apostle Erastus Snow, 9 years later, talks about the same thing and probably goes in a little more detail here about how that works. There's no real wealth in metallic or paper currency. At best, they are only representatives of wealth, though convenient in carrying on our trade. But the real wealth may be summed up in a few words. That is, the comforts of life. That is to say, what is needed for us and our families and those depending upon us. How are these things obtained? We might say by money, when we have the money to exchange for them, and when those commodities are to be bought or available. But where do they come from? They are not in the market unless somebody has produced them. If in the shape of food, some farmer has to raise it. If clothing, some factory has to produce it. If boots and shoes, somebody did the work. It is the labor of men's hands with the aid of machinery that produce these articles, if not by the labor of our community, by that of some other. And if we are dependent upon other people to produce our products, then are we their servants, and they our masters. Wow, that's a different doctrine, huh? So again, these two quotes show that one of the reasons why producing all our own consumer goods is part of building Zion is because we don't want to be dependent upon the wicked and ungodly to provide us our temporal needs. The next subcategory, which again answers the same question, I've labeled self-sustaining. That becoming self-sustaining was a major goal in the minds of the LDS leaders. In fact, let me start this subcategory out by reading a quote from the year 2001, L. Tom Perry. He's talking about Joseph Smith. The prophet had a design to build a community of saints, in other words, Zion. He had three major objectives. Notice what comes first. First, economic. Second, educational. Third, spiritual. The prophet Joseph Smith's desire was that the saints should become economically self-sufficient. A treasured remnant of our heritage of economic self-sufficiency is the Church Welfare Services Program. And he goes on to talk about it. So Apostle L. Tom Perry was talking about how Joseph said that in building a community of saints, priority number one is to achieve economic self-sufficiency. Let me go back in time here, 1860, Apostle Daniel H. Wells. We have a great deal to do to destroy wickedness and establish righteousness upon the earth and to prepare ourselves for the establishment of Zion, that she may become the head upon the earth. Do we feel that we do right and hold ourselves and all that we possess upon the altar of the kingdom of God? Do we feel that we should be diligent and economical and take that course that will make us the most independent people upon the earth? If we should bless the earth and ask God to bless it, that it may bring forth for our support and sustenance, and that we may have power to draw forth and combine the elements and thus make us independent of every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. So if you think about it, now that I've mentioned this idea that the Zion community has to be economically independent, it makes sense. It would be hard if the wicked had any kind of control, any kind of power over the citizens of a Zion society, economic power over them, then they could corrupt that Zion society. So economically, Zion has to be independent of the rest of the world. Let's see, George Albert Smith, 1870, so 10 years after that. Many years ago, efforts were made on the part of the presidency to extend the settlements into the warm valleys south of the rim of the basin. The country was very forbidding and sterile. Many were invited and called upon to go and settle there. The mass of those who went pushed forth their exertions and built up towns, cities, and villages. They established cotton fields and erected factories and supplied many wants which could not be supplied within the rim of the basin. It has been my lot to visit these regions recently, and I have felt to rejoice to see where men and women have taken hold with all their hearts to obey the commandments of God and to lay a foundation for Zion to become self-sustaining. Again, mentioning the goal of becoming self-sustaining. Four years later, George Albert Smith essentially says the same thing, but he talks about, oh, this is good. I'm going to go ahead and read it. We got lots of time, right? 1874, George Albert Smith, George A. Smith. We have been talking about the United Order and getting up tanneries, shoe shops, etc., and initial steps have been taken in some of the settlements with these objects in view. But it takes time to carry out and successfully accomplish such projects. But we can produce these things within ourselves. And it is our duty to do it. And instead of manifesting a disposition to oppose anything of this kind, we should exert all the influence and energy we possess to bring it about and to make ourselves self-sustaining. It is true that a great portion of our people at the present time are not in a condition to take hold of it with all they have, for many of them have been foolish enough during the success of business for the last 4 years, instead of paying their debts, to launch into business of various kinds and get deeper into debt. That class of men have to get their hands untied before they can take hold and promote the great project of uniting the whole of the Latter-day Saints in all their business affairs. But this must be done as fast as possible, and the work of making Zion self-sustaining must be regarded as part of the work of the Lord. For it is an obligation devolving upon us to provide within ourselves labor and the necessities of life. We must take hold of this matter, brethren and sisters, with all our hearts, and never let ourselves rest until Zion is independent of her enemies and all the world. I think they're making it pretty clear there. The next subcategory of quotes is the third and final answer to the question, why does it matter if we build our own consumer goods or not? And the answer to that question is this third subcategory, and the answer is, so we can stand independent when Babylon falls. And as I mentioned above, the quote above and several other quotes use the term Babylon to refer to the American economy. And let's see, there's eight quotes spanning from 1854 through 1879 that talk about this. I'll read, looks like I've highlighted three that are probably the best. Here's Wilford Woodruff. Don't know if you've heard of him. In 1867, he was only an apostle, right? So we don't have to believe him.
Whatever.
So 1867. We have to build up Zion independent of the wicked. We have got to become self-sustaining. And the Lord is inspiring his prophets to preach to us to lay the foundation for the accomplishment of this great work. The day is not far distant when we shall have to take care of ourselves. Great Babylon is going to fall. Judgment is coming on the wicked. The Lord is about to pour out upon the nations of the earth the great calamities which he has spoken of by the mouth of his prophets. And no power can stay these things. It is wisdom that we should lay the foundation to provide for ourselves. So Great Babylon's going to fall, and we need to be able to make our own everything.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it is, especially if we want iPhones.
Yeah. Well, we might have to do without iPhones. Just a thought.
Just a thought. Okay. Apostle George A. Smith, 1870. So I'm reading several so that you don't think I'm making all this up and taking one quote out of context. There's, what, eight here that essentially all say the same thing. 1870, it appears that we have gathered many to Zion who do not fully appreciate the great work of these days, namely, to place the people of God in a condition that they can sustain themselves against the time that Babylon the Great shall fall. Some will say that it is ridiculous to suppose that Babylon, the, quote, mother of harlots, is going to fall. Ridiculous as it may seem, the time will come when no man will buy her merchandise, and when the Latter-day Saints will be under the necessity of providing for themselves or going without. This may be a wild idea, but it is no more wild or wonderful than what has already transpired, and that before our eyes. When we are counseled to, quote, provide for your wants within yourselves, end quote, we are only told to prepare for that day. When we are told, quote, unite your interests and establish every variety of business that may be necessary to supply your wants, end quote, we are only told to lay a plan to enjoy liberty, peace, and plenty. Then Apostle Erastus Snow, 1877, so 7 years later. How long do you think it would take if we were all producers, rather than consumers, I guess, and converting the raw materials into useful articles to become a self-sustaining people? And then, if we heard of Babylon's downfall, we would not of necessity lift up our hands and cry, quote, O Lord, spare her a little longer. We are not ready for her to go down. We should suffer from the want of boots and shoes and for our clothing and our machinery and so forth, end quote. The United Order is designed to help us to be self-reliant and to teach us to understand what it costs to produce that which we consume. One of the chief obstacles in the way of our progress towards becoming a self-sustaining people is the lack of this understanding among the people. They cling to the habits and customs of Babylon that they have learned abroad. Ouch.
Yeah. Not good.
All right. So, I can see how someone might be overwhelmed hearing all these quotes. This isn't an aspect of building Zion that we ever talk about. Probably because we're so wrapped up in Babylon's economy and we enjoy it so well that the idea of having to produce our own consumer goods would be overwhelming, and why bother? So these quotes really motivated me to think, okay, well, so what do we do? And my thoughts about this is, you know, they say the best time to plant a fruit or nut tree is 10 years ago. We probably ought to get going on those of us who want to participate in a Zion society and prepare for the Savior's return. We probably ought to start producing at least one consumer good of our own on the side. So if you have a day job where you work for the man, which isn't God, by the way, if you have a day job where you work for the man, then it would be great to start a side job hobby of producing some kind of product that would be useful, that would be necessary to sustain life in a post-Babylon economy. You know, hats and, well, I don't know, we don't really do hats very much these days, but...
Well, in the deep of winter, you'd be grateful for one, you know, maybe that's
true. And, you know, I've said often the reason I garden is because... I like to eat.
Yeah.
And if the American economic system finally crumbles under its own weight, then I'll walk out the door, you know, if the terrorists take down the internet, because my work is on the internet. If the terrorists take it down, then I simply walk out my back door and now I'm a farmer because it's out there waiting for me. And there's lots to do that I don't get done in my orchards and gardens because, you know, I have a full-time job. But the idea of having a backup career, I think, is a great idea. A non-electric backup career where we're producing some kind of consumer good that would be helpful in a post-Babylon society. So gardening is an obvious one. Everybody has to have food, right?
Right.
And I've got a neighbor, well, not a close neighbor, but a couple blocks away, there's a family. I stopped and visited with them about it. It's really awesome. In the space between the sidewalk and the street, they dug up all the grass and laid down plastic barrier and built these 4x4 planters. There's about, I don't know, 10 or 12 of them. They live on a corner, so it goes around the corner. Looks really nice. The wood's all stained, and they've attached it to their sprinkler system, which, you know, I wouldn't do. But, I mean, it's not a bad idea, but you need to have a backup way to water the plants. But anyway, so they've put it in their sprinkler system, and it automatically gets watered. So their garden is right out front on that strip of land. And it looks really nice. You know, it's all very green and pretty during the year. You know, you don't have to dig up your lawn, but you can. There's a family in California. Their lot is a third of an acre, and they produce all their own food and enough to sell to local restaurants and to neighbors on a third of an acre lot.
That's pretty good.
Of course, they have to park their cars on the street because they've covered their driveway with planters.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, producing food, our own food, is a good start. In fact, I would encourage anybody who, and I'm not the only one who's doing the encouraging. I can't remember which prophet it was, Kimball or Benson, or I think it was Kimball who said there'll come a day when the only food you have to eat is what you can produce yourself. So is it better to start producing food before or after that day comes?
Before.
I
have to say, Barry Eaton is listening in.
Oh, good. Hi, Barry.
He said, back to the sewing machine. We buy one, we take it apart, we learn about it, and then we reproduce it. And honestly, that crossed my mind, but I thought, that is way beyond my ken. So I'm hoping someone else will do that.
I'm hoping that we'll gather other people who have those kinds of mechanical skills, who can just look at a machine and go, oh, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that person.
Mm-mm, I'm not either.
I think, didn't Barry, didn't you have something to do with sewing machines in the past? But, you know, they have
Did
those.
Did you really?
I think so. Hmm. Anyway, they have those trundle, is that what they call them? Trundle sewing machines,
no,
or you operate
treadle.
It with your foot?
No, treadle. And I've been coveting one. In fact, I've been doing searches online trying to find kind of how much I could expect to pay, but I don't want to buy it online because shipping would be prohibitive, you know?
Yeah, because it
and
would be...
And so then I would look on the local ads and see if the price is right, you know, because I really want one. Plus, Lehman's online, they sell modern sewing machines that are treadle-powered. And so
really?
You buy the machine, and it's about $400, and then you hook it up to a treadle table and let it rip. And I've also seen videos online of other people who have made lots of different tools that are powered by foot power, table saws and lathes. And drill presses, things like that, that are
was that all
powered.
On one website?
No.
Oh, different places.
Different ones, yeah.
We probably ought, man. If you wouldn't mind posting some of those links.
Oh, I'd love to. That was really
Design
fascinating.
The Facebook page.
Yeah.
And that would be great. This is a big undertaking to essentially create a sub economy. The folks in northern Spain, trying to remember the name of their ethnic group, that created the Mondragon network of cooperatives. They started in the 50s. Now they have a whole sub-economy. So that's what, 66 years or so? 60 years or so? So, you know, we can at least get it started. Before we get too old to run our trundle machines.
Treadle.
I'm going to have to write that word down.
Yes, you are.
Spell it. How do you spell it?
It's T-R-E-A-D-L-E.
Oh, so like you tread.
Uh-huh.
Treadle. Okay. Yeah. So you've found online all sorts of machines that are operated that way.
Yes. It's fascinating because I feel that's how we're going to have to deal with it. Now, maybe eventually down the road we will have little power plants, you know, but we need to be self-sufficient without being on the grid for a while. I believe that that's how it's going to play out.
Yeah, I sure wish my crystal ball hadn't rolled off the desk and crashed on the floor. It's just... Would be nice to know exactly how it's all going to play out, but we don't.
Really. No, we don't. But part of being prepared is what? Being close to the spirit and following the promptings, and those who are mechanically inclined. Well, and Barry also edited his remark. He expounded a little bit, and it's a good point. When we are really ready to live by the Lord's economic and governing principles, all that will be needed, someone will have that knowledge and the experiences needed to do what's necessary, you know.
Yeah, the Lord is quite the chess player. He can bring
his
player on the game when it's most needed.
Yes.
And he cheats. He brings pieces off the table and sets them down right where he needs them. It's like, wait a minute. That piece wasn't there before.
Uh-huh. Let's just say he prepares way ahead of time.
That's
not really cheating.
No. Well, yeah, I was being facetious.
I know.
So, yeah, I think once we do all we can in our circumstances to produce our own food, then we can start looking to, you know, other consumer goods as well.
Mm-hmm.
It amazes me. I don't get out to the big city very often, but when I get to Salt Lake, and, you know, as you drive up I-15, there's just neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood of little tiny houses on little tiny lots. And I just wonder, what are these people going to eat?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if
yeah, if they can't go to the grocery store.
So I suppose this is, yeah, I suspect that once, you know, the building of the New Jerusalem is going to be a whole different animal, I think, because, you know, the scriptures indicate that the city of Enoch inhabitants are going to be helping out, and my guess is they're way ahead of us on a technology level.
Yeah.
So they'll probably have, you know, pocket power generators that they pass out.
Maybe.
And, you know, and so that work of building that city will be hastened in its time. But it just makes sense to me that if we want to be prepared to live in a Zion society, we ought to be doing all we can now instead of waiting to be commanded in all things.
Well, I guess we can start getting serious about what we can produce ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, one of those quotes I read talked about the saints were foolish. Oh, I hated that word. They were foolish during the success of business for the last 4 years instead of paying their debts to launch into business of various kinds and get deeper into debt. I have to admit, that was me. So I'm currently working to get out of debt. You know, when the real estate bubble burst, that was the beginning of my dive into business debt. And fortunately, the latest thing I'm doing is helping me get out of all that, which is a blessing. But I do really enjoy having a backyard to putter around in and do gardening and chickens, and I installed a solar water distiller. Oh, did I show you that?
Yes.
Yeah. And
awesome.
I, you know, water independence is going to be, could very well be important. I was telling the guy who dug the ditch for me, he was asking about, okay, what are you doing and why? I said, there was an earthquake in Japan. I can't remember the name of the city, but it's kind of I think it's the sister city to Provo, about the same size. And half of the homes burnt down after the earthquake because the earthquake destroyed the water system. So the fire truck showed up, but there was no water to put out the houses. And
ouch.
Yeah, and it took months for them to get water to everybody's house. So to me, part of being self-sustaining is either water storage or some method of producing water. Before they chopped our ward into pieces, we had, I went online. There's a Utah Water Resources Division of whatever that has maps of where all the wells are. And I counted 12 wells in our ward.
Wow.
And three of them were on my street. Or two of them were on my street. And I happen to know both of them are inoperable. And I talked to the owner of one. He happens to be my home teacher right now. And I said, hey, let's take a look at your well. And so we dropped a, you know, tied a bolt to a string and dropped it down there to see, and then measured it to see how deep the water was, how far down the water was. And, you know, it's only 24 feet down, which really surprised me. And then we measured it, how deep the well was. And anyway, so I went online and found out how to build a water pump out of PVC pipe. And I built one. So now I have a backup water supply at my neighbor's well. He said, yeah, if you know, if the water system goes out, we can share with all the neighbors. And I thought, yes. I have a pump ready in case, you know, and that water's dirty. I mean, it's got pesticides and weed killer and bug killer and weed and everything else in it. So you can't drink it straight. You know, you'd have to boil it or distill it or something, but it's at least water. In an emergency setting, it would be useful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, producing water or storing it would be important. Food, obviously. And then we can start talking about clothing. I would love, you know, I have a big shop in my backyard that I currently just rent out because I can't think of anything useful to do with it. And I would love to have a museum of pre-electric technology in there, you know, where the local elementary school kids could come through and see a loom and you know, a drill and a treadle sewing machine and
treadle.
Did I say it right?
Funny. Almost. Well, you know, the Petit Neat Museum in Payson has things like that.
Oh, does it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I have been there and looked at lots of wonderful pre-electric things. What I would like to start doing is, you know, growing sheep or llamas or something to make wool and learn how to card and weave and spin and all that stuff.
Yeah, if only to pass it on to your grandkids or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So the knowledge is preserved.
In fact, I had a visiting teacher before she moved away who did all that stuff, and I said, boy, I want you on my team when the poop hits the fan.
Like him, she hits
away.
The fan?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and Barry chimed in about... he says, don't give up on having all sorts of energy available. It just takes a little know-how. I'm sure, you know, if there's running water, we could have a mill.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And then later on, better technology. But, yeah, he's right. We shouldn't give up on that totally. It's just that between when Babylon falls and Zion rises, there's going to be a little time period, I believe.
Of great discomfort.
And so, you know, we need to prepare for that.
Yeah, I really like the idea of a lot of people having backup pre-electric technologies.
Mm-hmm.
So that you know, we have a backup economy in place.
Mm-hmm.
I even talked to some people here locally, some friends locally, about introducing a alternative currency just to have in place. You know, there are a couple hundred cities across the U.S. that have a local currency. And
I didn't
you know,
realize there were that many.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The most famous are up in the Northeast. Gosh, tip of my tongue. But one community they started out, it was kind of just kind of a babysitting co-op idea. So their currency is 1 hour. And so you'd babysit and someone would give you the 1 hour bill, and then they could use that for them, you know, they could use that locally. And now it's so entrenched into their community that even the banks are allowing people to pay points on their loans with the local currency.
Wow.
Which is interesting.
Government banks? These must be privately owned banks.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that one of the communities allows the people to pay their electric bill with the local currency as well.
Wow.
And their taxes, I think. That's the big success, is if you get the government to accept the local currency for taxes, then you're set on a long-term deal. Because if the U.S. dollar tanks, and there are several things in play right now that can make that happen, several different unrelated things that could make that happen, then you have a backup currency in place. And even if it's only used locally for babysitting or whatever, it's at least there and people are familiar with it. And you just crank it up if the U.S. dollar becomes worthless. It just makes sense to me to prepare these kinds of things ahead of time. You know, I was telling the guy who dug my ditch, his dad has a well. And it has an electric pump on it. And, you know, he's aware of things. He realizes that you can't always depend on electricity being there. And I said, you know, you guys might think about putting a manual pump on that well. Because, you know, if it breaks, if the electric one breaks or is broken when things go bad, you won't be able to get the replacement part. There won't be anywhere to buy it from, and there won't be any currency to buy it with. So it's better to have that stuff ahead of time. You know, before the disaster hits is when the time to prepare. So anyway.
Well, I'm all fired up now.
All right. I have a bunch of comfrey plants surrounding one of my garden plots, and I trimmed off a bunch of those comfrey leaves when I found out that Andrea, who's usually on our call, makes salves out of them. So I dried up 50 leaves and crunched them up and sent them to her. You know, there's a lot we can do making medicinal kinds of things. You know, learn those skills and pass on those skills so that they're available when we need them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I've made some salves out of different herbs. I've done that.
Well, that's all I got for today.
Well, it's pretty good.
I wanted to bring something up. I've got a Facebook friend who's currently in the mourning process over the last election. She even identified where in the five steps of mourning she is.
Oh.
Over the election results. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she's a self-described Mormon liberal evolutionary biologist. Anyway, I'm writing a persuasive essay that I want her to... She's currently in graduate school, that I wanted to present to her and also for all of us to use to try to essentially, I hate to use this word, but recruit Latter-day Saints to to understand the need to build Zion and start moving back in that direction. So I'm writing about two-thirds of the way done with this. It was supposed to be a short, persuasive essay. And single-spaced, I'm currently on page 7.
Wow.
And I'm only two-thirds of the way done. So I guess it'll be about 10 pages. That's probably a little long for a persuasive essay, but the idea was to try to wake up traditional mainstream Mormons and say, look, this is important to God, therefore it should be important to us. And anyway, so I'm hoping to have that ready and send it around to everyone in our Facebook group and get feedback. I'm sure you'll find some grammatical errors for me, which I'll appreciate.
Yes, I will. Oh, it's so maddening when I'm just reading a book and something jumps out at me. It's like, where is their editor?
So I'm excited to get that done. I know I struggle with presenting this in ways that capture people's imagination and their interest. As you know, I write a monthly article for a local newspaper, called Thoughts on Zion. And, you know, I get 450 words per article, and it's really hard to say much in 450 words.
Yeah.
When you're, you know, quoting. I include all these quotes that I share every week on this call because, you know, Mormons want it to be authoritative when you make claims.
Well, sure. Somebody will always say, where does it say that? Who said
right.
that?
Yeah. In fact, I have John Pontius's book about Zion. I don't think I've ever written says who in the margins so often than I have in that book.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't want to be guilty of making assertions that can't be backed up.
Right.
But I do want to make assertions that can be backed up and are persuasive enough to capture people's interest in building Zion and getting more than a few of us moving back in that direction.
Right.
So anyway, I'll send that around when I get it done this week.
Okay. We may want to...
Yeah, Mark.
Yeah. What about trying to whip out of sight that those of us that have talents or have products that they're willing to donate to the, you know, to the group, that we can start marketing and selling those products, and you know, and then the, you know, then the group would have those funds to, you know, get other people going, creating things or buying, you know, raw products so they can start making other things.
Yeah, I kind of wish the company Made in Utah hadn't come up with that already, but I added you to a group called Zion Builders Co-op.
Okay.
That's probably where we ought to start talking about how are we going to, you know, plan this out and what is it going to look like and what are we going to call it and all
What's
that.
What's it called again?
Zion Builders Co-op. I'm pretty sure I added you.
Okay. I'll go check.
I will too. Did you add me?
No. Why would I?
Well, why not?
Well,
I'm offended.
Offended, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I think I just added you. Yes,
okay,
I just added
you.
So you are now. So I, you know, on that, I'm creating topics of discussion that we can talk about, like the first one there at the top, funding the co-op, and Mark had talked about some ideas on that. So yeah, Mark, if you'd respond to that, that'd be awesome. Because you had some ideas last time we talked.
Right. And well, I've got a lot of heirloom garden seeds and herb seeds that I'd be willing to, you know, to donate towards getting the group started and raising some funds. So.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Awesome, awesome. Let's do it.
Okay.
One more thing. Barry mentioned something. He said, I currently live in a community that produces its own power, has its own water and sewer system. It's just not a Zion community. Still, that's cool. I mean, you know.
Hadn't thought of it that way. That's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. Well, my wife came home, and I'm determined to spend some time with her, so I'm going to sign off here.
All right. I had a great time.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, everybody. And we'll see you next week. Next week, we're going to talk about economic unity, according to the apostles and prophets in the early church. So good night, everyone.
Good night.